Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the February NJEDA Telephonic Board Meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public will be advised to press 1, then 0 on their telephone keypad to be placed into queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated with. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Operator. Tim, if you could read the open public meeting notice.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Manero, let's do a roll call, please.
Okay. Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Here.
Vice Chairman Charles Swallow.
Here.
Noreen Giblin from the Governor's Office.
Here.
Banking Commissioner Marlene Caridi.
Present.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo.
Here.
Labor Commissioner Robert Angelo. Labor Commissioner Robert Angelo. Okay, I'll come back. Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Sean LaTourette.
Here.
Phil Elagia. Virginia Bauer.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Marcia Marley.
Present.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Rosemarie Hicks?
Here.
Okay. Labor Commissioner Robert Angelo? Okay. Phil Elagia? No. Okay, Mr. Chairman, at this time we have a quorum.
Great. Thank you, Manera. Folks, we have two sets of meeting minutes to approve today. In total, we're going to have 18 board votes, and I just want to remind everybody that's a lot of votes to move through, and if in making a motion, if you could just state your last name, as well as when you may, if you're seconding a motion, I would appreciate that. Before you, the minutes from the December 8th EDA board meeting for your review and approval, can I get a motion to approve the December 8th regular meeting minutes?
Chair, I move the minutes.
Thank you. Can I get a second?
Caridi, second.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move on to our executive session meeting minutes from December 8th. Can I get a motion to approve the executive session meeting minutes?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Dragon,
all right,
abstains.
Let's move.
I was not fully present.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Moving on to my remarks for this morning, during February, we take time to shine a light on Black history as we honor and celebrate and narrate the stories of African Americans. Black History Month provides us with the opportunity to remember together the struggles of African Americans to obtain basic civil rights and the challenges African Americans have faced. New Jersey is home to 1.4 million people of Black and/or African descent. During Black History Month, we reflect not only on this history, but on the power we have individually and collectively to change and transform the world in which we live. Inclusiveness and equity are an especially important focus this month. At the EDA, diversity and inclusion is more than a concept, more than a pie-in-the-sky goal. It's part of our mission. It's embedded in our strategic plan. Our commitment to set a new standard for diversity and inclusion is apparent from how our programs and projects supported minority-owned businesses this past year. On the New Jersey Windport project, the authority set a goal of awarding 15% of the total contract value to subcontractors that qualify as minority women and or veteran-owned firms. We didn't just sit back and wait to see what happened. We committed to a goal. We engaged in aggressive outreach efforts. In fact, our first stage of work was awarded with 51% of the work to be performed by a Hispanic-owned joint venture. This is just the beginning. We look forward to strong participation from underrepresented businesses and enterprises throughout the life of the project. Our Small Business Emergency Assistance Grant Program provides another example of how the authority has supported minorities. In Phase 3, 32% of the grants and 29% of the funding went to minority-owned businesses. In Phase 4, 37% of the grants and 35% of the funding went to minority-owned businesses. In each of these phases, 33% went to women-owned businesses. We can and will do more. Today, the board will consider a proposal to create the Main Street Lenders Grant Program, which will require recipients disperse 40% of the total lending grant to businesses located in Opportunity Zone eligible census tracts. These are areas that meet the federal definition of low-income communities. These are just a few examples of how the authority is working to advance programs that support equitable and inclusive recovery and sustainable economic growth. In conclusion, our focus on equity and inclusion is front and center as we acknowledge the struggles and honor the achievements of Black Americans during Black History Month. At the EDA, we continue to move closer to achieving the governor's vision for a stronger and more fair New Jersey. Thank you. Tim, if you could give the CEO's report.
Sure. Thanks, Everett. Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everyone, and belated Happy New Year. We didn't have a January meeting, so belated Happy New Year to everybody. We've continued to be quite busy despite not having a board meeting in January. January was quite active and into early February, despite the headwinds from Omicron and everything else going on in the world, but continue to be incredibly busy. We opened the application window for the Aspire program, which is one of the signature programs authorized by the Economic Recovery Act that Governor Murphy signed a year ago or so back in January of 2021. This is a pretty powerful and potent and progressive mixed-use, residential, affordable housing, mixed-income, transit-oriented development, a gap financing tool that we're incredibly excited about. And again, applications open for that in the month of January. We also did a lot of listening and consultation in advance of some of the items that we're bringing for your consideration today. Probably at the top of that list, or two at the top of that list, would be the food desert map. That Tara Colton is going to describe in a few moments. The Food Desert Relief Act was a component of the Economic Recovery Act as well, a really important demonstration of the legislature, and this is something that was championed by Speaker Coughlin in quite a significant way, as well as Governor Murphy's focus on sustainable community development and using and thinking about food insecurity as an economic challenge, not just a sort of a social challenge and a justice challenge. And so we have beginning to roll that forward today with the designation of the Food Desert Communities that you'll consider in a few moments, as well as the Historic Preservation Tax Credit. Prior to the Economic Recovery Act being signed, New Jersey was one of just 11 states that didn't have a state-level historic property tax credit. We are now off that list. We're on the good list, not the short list of people that didn't have one. And just driving around, places like, Trenton and Camden and Patterson and Newark and Jersey City and lots of other places that are not quite as dense and urban, there are great old buildings that could be home to new housing, that's affordable at market rate, that could be home to new innovation spaces, that this Historic Preservation Tax Credit Program will be advancing and enable us to advance. We're also bringing for you a consideration a package of proposals under this a federal program called SSBCI, the State Small Business Credit Initiative. This is a really powerful tool as well as part of the American Rescue Plan. It's about $250 million plus of potential resources to the state to support
small businesses, both via grants and loans, as well as venture investments. We'll describe that for you in greater detail in a few moments. Similarly, some good news in January. Governor Murphy signed a bill continuing to enhance the film and digital media tax credit. This has been a really important part of the governor's economic diversification strategy to grow, you know, basically a brand new industry. New Jersey, of course, is the original home of the film and TV, or the film business, but certainly California took our advantage over the years. Looking to bring that back in a big way since 2018, when that film tax credit was first brought back, the EDA has supported nearly 50 projects that have infused a little more than $600 million of activity into New Jersey's economy. And we'll have another series of proposed film tax credit, film and digital media tax credit proposals for your consideration today. Really importantly, too, and I want to thank Rosemary Hicks for hosting and convening a session we did right before. It's like the last thing we did before Omicron reared its ugly head. We did a great session down in Camden with the film and digital media community that exists in and around Greater Camden. Principally minority and women-owned businesses, small businesses, micro businesses, in a lot of cases, that we need to do a better job reaching out to and getting these the film and the benefits of a new industry making sure those benefits are spread, you know, evenly and equitably into those communities as well. So it was a great listening session and, you know, frankly, feedback we needed to hear in a good way. We continue to be busy on a whole bunch of fronts. I won't go through everything in great detail. And you have the written report in front of you, and I can keep us here all morning describing everything we're up to. The only thing I'd mention before handing it back is also in January, and obviously everything we do is underlined and is only possible by getting it right or getting as close to right as possible as it relates to our obligations as stewards of taxpayer resources. In January of 2022 was the three-year anniversary of the original audit from the Office of the State Comptroller, which obviously highlighted a significant set of challenges and shortcomings in the tax credit programs, but also broadly at the EDA. That was followed on by the task force investigation, task force reports, all of which provided a roadmap for how we can do better and fix what needs fixing. A lot of those recommendations were incorporated in the Economic Recovery Act. The report that Comptroller Kevin Walsh, I want to thank for his partnership and for his help in making us a better organization. That report was issued. The report issued in January of this year, I think, appropriately characterized a lot of progress, particularly on the big stuff. And I want to give Bruce Sayala and Chris Baker a shout for their leadership in helping us address a lot of the shortcomings that were identified by the original report. But also an accurate reflection that we've got more work to do. We're not done yet. The mission is not complete. We've made a ton of progress, but we've got work to do to continue to tighten up everything we do, both new programs and legacy programs. I think that report is an additional roadmap of work left to do. Although again, I think the significant progress that Comptroller Walsh marked in his report is a testament to the focus and commitment we've had as an organization, that you've encouraged us and directed us to have as a board, and that we take seriously every single day to be stewards of taxpayer resources and make sure that we are both growing the economy, but doing it the right way, and making sure that we've got the processes and procedures, we've got the staff training, we've got the resources that we need, and we've got the systems in place to do these things the right way. So I want to thank the board for your support for all of those changes over the last three-plus years, as well as, our team at the EDA for the work that they've done to make huge progress here. The mission continues and the journey goes on as we continue to make progress here, but I'm really proud of the progress we've made so far. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll yield the floor back to you and happy to take any questions, but we've got plenty of items to jump into and plenty of great programs to roll through.
Great. Thank you,
Before you get started, I just wanted to let you know I'm on the call, Phil Elijah.
Okay. Good morning.
Thank you, Phil.
Same here, Rob Angelo. I dropped off for the roll call. Unfortunately, I've been here. Thank you.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you, everyone. The first items on the agenda are policy-related, and so I'd like to highlight a few recommendations considered by this month's policy committee. They are enhancements to the Sustain and Serve program, as well as the mapping of food desert communities across the state. These two initiatives represent support for New Jersey's neediest communities and funding to support New Jersey small businesses in the food industry that have been negatively impacted by COVID-19. I applaud the efforts of the EDA and our partners in taking on issues like these and implementing programs that can make a difference in everyday lives of New Jersey residents. The first item is the proposed food desert communities under the Food Desert Relief Act. Tara Colton, Executive Vice President, Economic Security, presenting. Tara.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. I'm really proud to be presenting two items to address food insecurity and combat the hunger that is hiding in plain sight throughout our state, both of which help advance the governor's commitment to a stronger, fairer New Jersey. Just to echo the chairman and Tim's remarks, both of these items really reinforce EDA's belief that addressing food insecurity is both a moral issue and a strategy that's vital to economic development. Not just the right thing to do, it's also the smart thing to do. So the first item is that we are requesting your approval of the list, map, and methodology designating 60 New Jersey food desert communities through the Food Desert Relief Act. As Tim said, this is part of the Economic Recovery Act that Governor Murphy signed into law last year, which authorizes EDA to dedicate up to $240 million in funding over 6 years through tax credits, loans, grants, and technical assistance to increase access to nutritious foods and develop new approaches to alleviate food deserts. We are building out those program models and will be issuing regulations for public feedback in the coming months. But our first task was to work with our partners throughout government and engage with the community to designate up to 50 food desert communities where we can deploy these nearly $250 million in resources. This is an art, not a science, and we believe we've developed the most comprehensive, holistic approach to measuring food insecurity of any state in the country. This has been a true whole-of-government approach and was informed by extensive feedback and guidance from the Governor's Office, Department of Community Affairs, Department of Agriculture, Department of Health, Department of Human Services, and others. I have to take a moment to thank Secretary of Agriculture Doug Fisher, Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver, and the extraordinary Dr. Chris Wheeler, the Chief Data Officer of the Department of Community Affairs, who has been leading the incredibly rigorous methodology that created this map and list. I also want to echo Tim's thanks to Speaker Coughlin, who's been a champion of the Food Desert Relief Act and of strategies to holistically address hunger throughout New Jersey. And lastly, I want to thank the team at EDA, Lucia Gaudry, Brian Todd, Emily Apple, Rich Kasman, Michael Candela, who've been working so closely together to develop this. Also, as part of Executive Order 63 and echoing Tim's comments, we've been deeply committed to a transparent, iterative process that's informed by public feedback. Last year, we issued an RFI to help us shape our approach to this work. We got about 36 responses and have spent the last few months in an intensive process to develop what's before you today. A few weeks ago, we issued a draft list, map, and methodology, as well as all the raw data behind the numbers and invited public feedback. The core framework is driven by Dr. Wheeler's extraordinary work, which uses an econometric factor analysis that, in essence, considers more than 24 factors that, when taken together, signal the presence of a food desert. These factors include the food retail environment, which is the most traditional way to measure a food desert, but it also incorporates economic factors, demographics, health factors, and community factors. I want to emphasize that what's before you today is an updated and revised version of what we issued to the public in January, as we have made changes to directly reflect what we heard through that process, particularly feedback on the quality of existing food retailers. So we are requesting your approval of this list, which designates 50 food desert communities that cover all or part of 57 municipalities in all 21 counties throughout the state. These food desert communities are rural, urban, suburban, and split pretty evenly throughout the north, central, and southern regions of the state, reinforcing that hunger and limited access to healthy foods is an issue that's all too prevalent throughout the Garden State. Lastly, this list will be used in full or in part to determine communities eligible for tax credits, grants, loans, and or technical assistance under the Food Desert Relief Act, and may be used in full or in part to determine eligibility for other future EDA food security programs. Thank you so much. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Tara. Any questions for Tara? If there's no questions for Tara, can I get a motion to approve?
Fred Dumont.
Thank you, Fred. Can I get a second?
Greedy, second.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item, Sustain and Serve New Jersey, program enhancements. Tara Colton will continue to present. Tara. Oh, Tara will be joined by Emily Apple, Program Manager, Economic Security.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. So I will be doing a tag team on this with Emily, who is the heart and soul of Sustain and Serve. We are requesting approval of a series of program enhancements to Sustain and Serve New Jersey, which Emily will walk you through. Just as background, Sustain and Serve is a program that we launched about a year ago, which has exceeded even our wildest expectations. Over the past 12 months, we have awarded $34 million in grants to 31 incredible organizations across the state, which has already supported the purchase of more than 3 million meals from over 400 restaurants in more than 150 municipalities in every county in the state. The governor always describes Sustain and Serve as a win-win-win. We're able to feed people who are in need, support the nonprofits that do this vital work, keep restaurants open, keep workers employed, and so much more. And in November, just a few days after his reelection, Governor Murphy announced that the state will be dedicating an additional $10 million in American Rescue Plan funds for a third phase of Sustain and Serve. I've always said that this program comes back to dignity and to helping people who don't know where their next meal is coming from. And to reinforce how vital this is, I wanted to share a brief data point from one of our grantees working in Bergen and Passaic County. They recently did a survey of the people who received the meals, and they found that 100% of those that answered said the meals they received meant they were eating more vegetables than they would normally have access to. This next part is quite sobering. When asked what they would eat if it wasn't for the meal they received from the program, some respondents said nothing, while others said canned food, soup, cereal, or a piece of bread. Puts it all in perspective. So with that, I'm proud to turn it over to Emily to walk us through what we are proposing as enhancements for the next phase of this program. Emily, take it away.
Thank you, Tara. The board is asked to approve enhancements to the Sustain and Serve program, as well as continued delegations of authority to authority staff to approve applications and accept additional funding for the program if it becomes available in the future. These are the same delegations that were approved by the board this time last year in February 2021. With the program's extraordinary success has also come many lessons learned, which lead us to request these enhancements to the program that will ensure its continued success, align with new requirements under the American Rescue Plan and EDA's expanded powers under the Economic Recovery Fund, as well as respond directly to feedback received through a public survey from grantee organizations and members of the public on how we can continue to amplify the impact of this important program. First, staff is requesting the following changes to eligibility criteria. To align with the American Rescue Plan's aid to impacted nonprofits eligible use, phase three and subsequent phases of Sustain and Serve will be limited to nonprofit 501c3 and 501c19 organizations, in particular NAICS codes as detailed in your board memo. These organizations are most likely to serve in COVID-impacted communities and will still encompass everything from small grassroots nonprofits all the way to large established organizations, much like our current set of grantees. All current Sustain and Serve grantees fall within these proposed NAICS codes. Staff also proposes lowering the eligibility for demonstrating a past history of meal purchases from New Jersey-based restaurants from at least 3,000 meals costing $50,000 to, in phases one and two, to at least 1,500 meals costing $25,000 from March 9, 2020 through the date of application. We believe this may allow some past applicants who did not meet the prior higher threshold to now potentially qualify for the program. Also, in phase three and subsequent phases of the program, nonprofits will also have to demonstrate increased organizational costs due to the impact of the pandemic as part of their application, in line with requirements under the American Rescue Plan. Eligibility for restaurants in this program will be expanded to not only include entities classified under NAICS Code 722, food services and drinking places, but also NAICS code 624210, community meals, social services, which includes some specialty catering organizations providing meals directly to facilities such as senior homes, facilities for persons with disabilities, and other congregate living facilities. Restaurants will also now need to be in operation as of June 4th, 2021, revised from February 15th, 2020. Staff is also requesting changes to the eligible uses of sustain and serve funds. While previously funds could only pay for the purchase of meals, staff proposed that grantee organizations now be allowed to use up to 10% of their award to cover operational costs directly associated with program implementation, limited to staff time and fringe, mileage costs associated with meal pickup, drop-off, and distribution by the grantee organization, payments to vendors that are helping with invoicing and monitoring of the program, as well as supplies. We also propose raising the cost per meal from $10 to $12 per meal in recognition of the increased cost faced by restaurants, as well as allowing the cost of delivery by the restaurants to be included as an eligible cost under the meal cap. We thank the board for their consideration of these changes as we continue to support New Jersey nonprofits, restaurants, and feed millions of New Jerseyans. I would also be remiss if I didn't take the opportunity to thank Charlie O'Connor and Pat Williams for their support of our grantees and tireless work to make this program a success. As I mentioned, we did a survey of our grantee organizations and members of the public, and our grantees went out of their way to universally praise our team and the service and support that they provide and make this program a joy and an ease to participate in. So I'm happy to take any questions the members may have.
Great. Do we have any questions for Tara and Emily? If we have no questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Robert Shimko, motion.
Thank you, Robert. Can I get a second?
Second, Moyo.
Thank you, Liz. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Aisha Glover, I'm going to abstain only because Audible invests in a sustain and serve recipient organization heavily.
Great. Thank you, Aisha. Next item is on economic growth. The Commuter and Transit Bus Private Carrier Pandemic Relief and Jobs Program. Olivia Ballone, Project Officer, Clean Energy Programs, presenting. Olivia.
Thank you, Chairman, and good morning, members of the board. The Commuter and Transit Bus Private Carrier Pandemic Relief and Jobs Program is proposed to provide one-time grant funding to private bus carriers in New Jersey that operate as essential service providers during the pandemic and experience significant revenue loss due to reduced ridership. The program, as outlined by the state legislator, has a tightly defined purpose targeted to provide support to private carrier companies. We are requesting approval to launch a $25.625 million program, which was explicitly allocated and approved in this year's state budget. It will be $25 million for grants and $625,000 for admin fees. We are requesting delegated authority for EDA CEO to execute a memorandum of understanding with the DCA to approve or decline applicants based on non-discretionary review and to approve final decisions on appeals. Based on the highly focused nature of this program as prescribed in the state budget, we expect there to be a dozen eligible applicants with an average award amount of $1.65 million. If approved by the board, the program will be structured as a non-competitive grant. The application will be open for no less than 2 weeks, and all applicants that apply within this period and meet the eligibility requirements will receive a grant. The grant has two key features, a flat grant amount of $500,000. Now, this award is intended to address the base overhead costs that are independent of volume of service, for example, vehicle maintenance, employee salaries, et cetera. Yeah. And $500,000 is based on the amount of anticipated applicants, and in the event that we have more than anticipated eligible applicants, that flat award amount will be adjusted lower. The remainder of the undistributed funds will be allocated based on each applicant's proportional share of 2020 total vehicle revenue miles, which is publicly reported to the National Transit Database. And this proportional calculation is used to account for the additional variable revenue losses and cost increases associated with volume of service. So, for example, a carrier reporting 1 million vehicle revenue miles has the opportunity to receive a larger award than a carrier who only reported 300,000 vehicle revenue miles. In either case, the maximum award will not exceed an applicant's unmet need. For this program, we define that as the difference between 2020 New Jersey revenue and 2019, less than any other public or private relief funds that a company received for 2020. This is to avoid duplication of benefits, as is required by the funding source. Now, any funding that is capped will be reallocated to the pro rata pool, and because of the nature of non-competitive grants, all funding will be held until any appeals are managed. For this program, we have our standard EDA eligibility requirements, being registered to do business and operate in the state of New Jersey, and have a satisfactory EDA legal review and be in good standing with our sister agencies. We did add New Jersey Transit to that list as well. And we have some eligibility requirements that are consistent with other EDA COVID programs, which include being in business prior to February 15, 2020, and to self-certify best effort to not furlough or lay off employees. The program's unique eligibility criteria are all third-party verifiable for both duplication of benefits and for simplification of program design. Now, those requirements include be a commercial for-profit business, public and government entities are not eligible, provide a federally defined fixed route bus service or commuter bus service, demonstrate revenue loss that has not been fully addressed by any public or private relief funding sources, and having reported those vehicle revenue miles greater than zero in New Jersey in 2020. The effects of the pandemic are well understood, and as such, this program has been designed in response to the state budget allocation to help transportation companies alleviate the ongoing revenue loss from the pandemic. Thank you for your time and attention, and I'll take any questions now. Thanks.
Any questions for Olivia? If we have no questions for Olivia, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Jenny Bell, I'll
thank you, Phil. Can I get a second?
I'll second Jenny Bauer.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, moving on to authority matters and MOUs. First item is New Jersey Department of Treasury for the NJEDA participation in the State Small Business Credit Initiative. Riley Edwards, Project Officer, Sector Development, presenting. Riley.
Good morning. Members of the board, before you is a request for approval of a memorandum of understanding with the New Jersey Department of the Treasury regarding the authority's participation in the U.S. Treasury State Small Business Credit Initiative, or SSBCI. Staff also requests approval of the six program concepts and funding allocations that will be proposed in the SSBCI application, as well as delegated authority to the CEO to apply for SSBCI funding for these concepts and funding allocations and to accept funds if approved. Staff will return to the board for approval of program specifications, solicitation awards, or investment. Some quick background on SSBCI. It's a program of U.S. Treasury. The funds go for small business lending and venture investing, programs designed to cause and result in the lending and investment of private capital into small businesses. It was originally established in 2011, and New Jersey participated in that round. A second round was funded in the American Rescue Plan. New Jersey is eligible for a non-competitive allocation of $255 million, with sub-allocations for very small businesses and businesses owned by socially and economically disadvantaged individuals or SETI businesses. Additional incentive funds are available to states that show strong support for these businesses. As was done in 2011, New Jersey Treasury will be the direct applicant, and EDA will be the contracted entity responsible for implementing the programs. The MOU lays out this relationship and the responsibilities of the authority and Treasury in implementing the programs and complying with all relevant federal and state requirements. The SSBCI application process is in two phases. Some basic information was submitted in December, and the second application, including proposed program designs, is due this Friday, February 11th. We are proposing six program concepts in the application, two small business programs, one clean energy program, and three venture programs. First, the blended capital fund, for which we propose an allocation of $50 million, would invest SSBCI funding in a fund or other investment vehicle managed by a private party, which would be selected through a public solicitation process. The manager would be required to bring in additional private capital and to use that blended pool of funds to purchase eligible loans from CDFIs, community development financial institutions, and minority depository institutions, or MDIs, allowing them to do more lending. purchase loans would be securitized and note sales would fund additional lending. The second program, the Recovery Loan Loss Reserve, we propose an allocation of $25 million. This will be a scaled-up version of the CDFI Emergency Loan Loss Reserve and will guarantee 50% of the value of eligible loans made by participating CDFIs and MDIs, allowing them greater ability to leverage their resources and support small businesses. Third program, Clean Energy Business Financing, we propose an allocation of $80 million. This would be part of the New Jersey Green Fund Initiative. The program would offer two approaches, issuing companion loans in parallel with private lenders and purchasing portions of loans issued by private lenders with the goal of supporting clean energy businesses that will create jobs in New Jersey. Next, the life science investment. We propose an allocation of $60 million would invest FSBCI funds into one or more venture funds to support early-stage life science businesses in New Jersey. Fund managers would be selected through a public solicitation process. Next, the Angel Match Program. Propose an allocation of $20 million, aims to build and improve on the former Covest pilot program and will match angel investors' investment in early-stage product-based technology companies by offering convertible notes of up to $500,000. Finally, the SETI Seed Fund, for which we propose an allocation of $20 million, will invest funds into one or more venture funds selected through a public solicitation process to support startups owned by socially and economically disadvantaged entrepreneurs. The authority is contracted with Rutgers to complete a disparity study of venture investment in minority-owned businesses, including the authority's own investments in such firms. If the study finds a statistically significant disparity and recommends race or ethnicity-conscious remedies tailored to address the effects of discrimination, the authority may incorporate into the SETI Seed Fund targets for specific groups as part of a strategy to remedy the identified disparities. Together, these six programs are expected to leverage private funding more than 16 times the SSBCI funding over 10 years, or more than $4 billion to support small businesses in New Jersey. To wrap up, this request is for the board's approval of the MOU with New Jersey Treasury, of the six program concepts proposed, and the corresponding funding allocations. Members are also requested to delegate authority to the CEO to sign and execute the MOU, apply for SSBCI funding as the contracted entity to New Jersey Treasury, and to accept funds if approved. Staff will return to the board for approval of program specifications, solicitation awards, or investment. Thank you. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Riley. Do we have any questions for Riley? If we have no questions for Riley, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Aisha.
Thank you, Aisha. Can I get a second?
Fred Dumont, second.
Thank you, Fred. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item under authority matters. Initial funding to support the establishment of the Salem County Office of Economic Development. Jeffrey Storr, Senior Project Officer, Infrastructure and Economic Growth, presenting. Jeffrey.
Thanks so much. Good morning, all. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Members of the board are asked to approve a memorandum of understanding to provide $100,000 from EDA's Winport budget to Salem County for the purpose of setting up an Office of Economic Development. So this investment by the authority is part of the Winport project's broader commitment to the local community in Salem County. It's an initial investment by the authority to support the county's effort to develop a sustainable economic development framework and to formalize this framework through the creation of an Office of Economic Development as a department within county government. The county's need and interest in developing this framework is being driven by the development of the wind port. This development will bring project developers and Tier 1 manufacturers to the port, which means skilled construction, manufacturing and assembly jobs located at the port. And it will also attract firms and create local jobs for other parts of the offshore wind supply chain. One of the key goals of the new office will be to act as a central focal point of contact for the industry and to support localization of the supply chain. This is also the driver of the why now. The county needs a well-grounded economic development framework in place now, as the supply chain from Tier 1 firms on down will be looking to engage with the community and to take initial steps to localize operations in advance of the port's commissioning. Now, authority staff intend for this investment to be tied specifically to the wind port, and to make clear this intention and to solidify its commitment as part of its broader effort to support the development of the offshore wind industry in Salem County, this funding will be sourced from the wind port budget. With this in mind, This funding would contribute to the first year of the office's operations to support establishing a physical location, hiring staff, and beginning to enact the county's economic development plan. So in August of last year, Salem County published an economic development vision and action plan. There were two key outcomes of this plan. First, formulation of a set of goals that the economic development plan should aim to accomplish and high-level strategies to achieve those goals. And secondly, a resolution that the best way to enact this economic vision is to launch an Office of Economic Development in Salem County to act as a focal point for economic development initiatives with qualified staff dedicated to working hand-in-hand with the localities across the county to implement the plan. So this MOU is designed to codify the authority's commitment to contribute to Salem County's effort to set up this Office of Economic Development. The goal of the proposed funding is to support the kickoff of this process, to catalyse local support and further local investment in the setup of the office. And staff anticipate that Salem County will put up matching funds to support the launch of the office. So as prefaced, the authority's intention here is to really tie its investment in Salem County specifically to the development of the wind port. It's anticipated that the opening of the wind port will bring not only long-term jobs for Tier 1 manufacturing activities, the turbine components and marshalling of offshore wind projects, but also localisation of other parts of the supply chain and other supporting businesses with flow-on demand effects for existing small businesses in Salem County. In terms of timing, the time is right to push forward with this economic development plan to allow the county sufficient time and runway to begin to enact its vision ahead of the port being commissioned, with long lead times in offshore wind planning, meaning that both prospective tenants at the wind port and other supply chain participants will be looking to set up operations and engage with local stakeholders well in advance of operations commencing. The authority also recognises the need for the county to set up frameworks to capture and leverage this new economic activity in alignment with its stated economic development goals, with a focus on business attraction and retention and community and downtown revitalisation designed to boost economic resilience across diverse communities in Salem County, efforts that require long-term planning. The county will be required to report on expenditures, budget and office progress on a regular basis, and authority staff will review progress after 10 months with a view to potentially returning to the board in approximately 12 months to request additional funding to support the office's continued operations. So in summary, members of the board are asked to approve a memorandum of understanding to provide $100,000 from EDA's wind port budget to Salem County for the purpose of setting up an Office of Economic Development. Thanks so much.
Do we have any questions for Jeffrey?
Hi, this is Rosemary. I actually have three quick ones. Jeffrey, I know that you mentioned that this was for Tier 1 activity. So is it just limited to Tier 1 businesses or contractors that are coming into Salem or we anticipate coming into Salem? And as a subset of that, what is a Tier 1? I guess I should ask that first. So that's my first question. The second question is the matching. Is that required, or is that a recommendation that if they don't match, we're not going to pursue that? And then my third question is there a DEI component to that?
So I'll answer the first question first. So the wind port itself is designed to house Tier 1 component manufacturers. So a Tier 1 component manufacturer is the manufacturer of the turbine itself. There's only sort of three of those in the world, three competitors in that space, and we anticipate one or more of them setting up operations at the wind port. That's all to say that that's just the wind port. The office is designed to support the localization of the entirety of the offshore wind supply chain, any and all elements of the supply chain that wish to localise and set up operations within the county. So that could include the makers of subcomponents for those turbines and and several other parts of the supply chain, including transmission components and other features of offshore wind farms that need to be built close to the port. So the port itself is designed to support Tier 1 manufacturers, but the office's mission is to support the localization of the entirety of the offshore wind supply chain, components, service provision, that sort of thing.
Okay.
Absolutely, Jeff, and this is Brian Sabina. Yeah, Rosemary, I think the long and short of it is we're taking care of the big guys, but we need a team of folks across the state and especially in Salem County, making sure that small businesses are able to sell into those major manufacturers and local businesses are able to sell in. So that's really what this investment is about.
Okay,
in terms
of your question on matching,
yes, we'll be looking to have the county match this. We've already been in close communication with the county and are fully expecting them to do that quite soon, as soon as kind of this board moves forward with this item. Relative to DEI components, I don't think there's any question that when we look at Salem County, we look at their seat, the city of Salem, and the opportunity we have in Salem County that DEI is a huge part of what it means to do that project the right way. It's core to our vision for delivering an offshore wind port that really sets the new standards for diversity and inclusion. That's something that Tim and the governor and many of us have stood up and said is really important to us. So we fully expect that that is core to this funding and core to the efforts of the local economic development organization. In fact, that was part of their there were certainly threads of that. I don't know if it was a specific call-out, but certainly threads of that in their countywide goals as part of their economic development plan.
So does our Michelle Bowden, is her role part of this as well when we talk about DDI or NJEDA? I know that we're wearing a couple hats, so when we talk about these type of programs, I know I had mentioned before that if we could just have something that says that there's been a review, then we're all moving in the same direction, would again be helpful, just to make sure that we don't lose that part as the train starts to pick up speed.
I'm happy to answer that, and then Michelle, feel free to jump in. But Michelle and her team are doing a phenomenal job leading our local engagement and diversity advisory council as part of the Windport project. Many of the members of the county are engaged in that council, and there's high overlap between that work and this effort. So I think we are very much aligned, but happy to have Michelle weigh in additionally.
Sure. I will say this. Thank you, Brian. Rosemary, we are very, tapped in and tied into this project from the very beginning. As Brian said, it was a absolute must that we embedded diversity and equity and inclusion into this project from the very start. It was very important from the highest levels of our state government, the governor, and with Tim's direction. We, as you know, implemented the disparity study so that we could, in fact, ensure that we have NWVE goals on this project, as well as the workforce and local engagement piece that Brian just alluded to. So we are absolutely in lockstep and, are continuing these efforts full force. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Any other questions for Jeffrey? If we have no questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Giblin, so moved.
Thank you, Nancy. Can I get a second?
Caridi, second.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on our agenda under procurement, a 2021 RFP number 129 for marketing consulting services. Pat Rose, Managing Director of Marketing and Product Development, presenting. Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, everyone. So this item is a request to enter into a contract with five marketing firms to provide marketing support to the authority. Those five firms are Tara Dowdell Group, Masterpiece Design,
Market Smith, Violet Communications, and 360 Marketing and PR. Before I get into the actual contract, I'll just spend a quick moment on a little bit of background, which I think will help illustrate our need for this contract that we're requesting your approval for today. So for quite some time, the EDA has contracted with outside marketing firms to provide support to our relatively small in-house marketing staff. And the type of support, just to give an example of the, of what firms typically provide us, are creative design and support, website design, planning of marketing campaigns, and purchasing of digital, print, or radio advertising space, just to give you some examples of what marketing services means in real tasks. Several years ago, following the expiration of the contract at the time, it was decided to not enter into a new contract and instead bring the authority's marketing functions fully in-house using just our staff. I think our marketing at the time was really limited to just small business loans and bond financing, and so it was a pretty small universe of products, relatively well known. There really wasn't a need to continue to use outside resources. I think since the time that decision was made, quite a bit has changed within the authority. Under the Murphy administration, EDA is charged with leading a number of initiatives and new products in support of the governor's economic plan. And this includes everything from small business support to growing New Jersey's competitiveness across emerging sectors to supporting community investments. You're hearing new initiatives even today as far as food security. And so the scope of what we're doing continues to grow and continues to be much beyond what our marketing had traditionally done in the past. And the more important work of helping businesses emerge from COVID-19, and marketing is critical to that and making sure that businesses are aware of how to access those resources. So marketing continues to be a critical need within the authority. We're doing more products and initiatives than perhaps ever before. And so there's really a need for, again, for outside support to supplement, you know, the internal efforts of our staff. And it's not really a one-size-fits-all approach any longer. You can imagine that the marketing approach behind marketing a small business loan program is much different than a larger tax credit program like Emerge, than a food security program, than a clean energy program. And so there's a varied need of strategies that are needed to appropriately market these programs that we're working on. And so we're back out to look for outside marketing support. And so getting into the contract that we're asking for your approval for today, as I'm sure you can imagine, it's not really cost effective to do a new procurement each time we have a new program that we'd like to market. There's so many programs. So we made the decision to go out with an RFP for general marketing support that would give us access to a pool of several qualified firms to support us on an ongoing basis for a wide variety of any needs that we may have that come up in the course of marketing these programs. And so that's kind of the background and the reason why we're requesting approval for this contract today. As far as the RFP and how we went into selecting the recommended award, the vendor to award to, the memo has a lot of the details of the RFP as far as when and how it was publicly advertised, but we did receive a robust response to that RFP. We received 26 proposals, 24 of which were deemed responsive and were subsequently scored by an evaluation committee. The evaluation committee looked at criteria that included, of course, price, but also other factors such as experience, personnel from the firms, and the actual proposal to meet the scope of work that we're going to be looking for some of these firms to meet. Each evaluation criteria was weighted. An average score was then calculated based on the scores of the evaluation committee members. Within the memo that you have, you'll see the total average score for all of the 24 responsive firms ranked from highest to lowest. You'll also see that the five firms that we're recommending today were the five highest scoring firms under that evaluation process. just a little bit of insight into once the contract is executed, the way that will generally work with these firms is that any project or any need that we have, we will put out as a task order exclusively to these five firms. The firms will review the task order, can decide if they want to respond and do the work, and if they do, would provide us any information needed to respond to that. Part of that's a cost estimate. Part of that might be their general approach to how they go about doing the task. So that's the contract and what we're looking for today in a nutshell, but I'm happy to answer any questions there might be.
Any questions for Pat? There's no questions for Pat. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
This is Rosemary. I just wanted to make a statement and say thank you to Tim's team and JDA for this particular proposal that went out. I know that when I first started on the board, one of the concerns that I had was utilizing small micro businesses of color in helping to help these businesses grow opposed to just grants. And I'm happy to see the list of people that applied and the fact that, you know, some of them were selected. So I say bravo. Thank you for doing that, and I think it's going to make a world of difference. And this is an example of how EDI works in one of the best ways, and thanks for listening. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you, Rosemary. Any more discussion or comments? Okay, let's go to the vote. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we're going to move on to the incentives portion of our agenda. Jenny, would you like to offer a few words in advance of the incentive items before the board today?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I'll keep it brief. As our CEO, Tim Sullivan, mentioned, we are very excited to bring forth this historic property reinvestment program, which was under discussion on our incentive committee meeting, which was January 27th. So sort of a long time coming, but we're very happy about, introducing this, as well as a number of film and tax credits. So with that, I will pass it back to you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jenny. The first item under in incentives are the proposed new rules for the Historic Property Reinvestment Program. Adita Milstead, Director, Historic Preservation, presenting. Adita.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning to everybody. Today I'm going to walk you through the new proposed Historic Property Reinvestment Program and then briefly go over approvals we're seeking from the board. This new program, Historic Tax Credit Program, was established under the Economic Recovery Act of 2020 and was set up to work in conjunction with the Federal Historic Tax Credit Program. The program provides tax credits to incentivize historic rehabilitation in New Jersey and focuses on historic preservation as a component of community development. Funding for the program is $300 million over a course of 6 years, with an annual cap of $50 million. Awards for the program will range from 40 to 45% of the eligible cost based on type of project and location. Finally, the project is a competitive program with applications being submitted by a pre-established deadline and then reviewed and scored by a selection committee. Regarding compliance with Executive Order 63, draft rules were published for comment, and we held two virtual public listening sessions on December 17th and December 20th. And during the sessions, we presented an overview of the program and draft rules and allowed for opportunity for public feedback. In addition to the listening session, public was able to provide written feedback through NJEDA's ERA's transparency website, as well as through a newly created email address, and the read and comment period was from December 9th to the 23rd. The program has a number of eligibility requirements, and the detailed information on all program requirements are included within the package as part of the board memo, but I'm going to highlight some of the main requirements, some of which are similar to other programs within the ERA. These include requirements for economic feasibility, and a business entity or the applicant must demonstrate at the time of the application that without the tax credit, the rehabilitation project is not economically feasible. There's also a requirement for the applicant to prove that a project financing gap exists and that the tax being considered for the project is equal or less than the gap. There's also requirements with regards to when construction can commence. And basically, the business entity or the applicant must not have started any construction activity on the site prior to submitting the application or the execution of the agreement, with some certain very limited exceptions, mainly dealing with unexpected or unforeseen damage to the property. There's also requirements with regards to business entity contributed capital of at least 20% of the total cost of the project, with one exception being that for projects located within a government-restricted municipality, the business entity contributed capital needs to be at least 10% rather than 20%. And finally, the project must be what is a rehabilitation project, which the program defines as a specific construction project or improvement or phase of a project or improvement undertaken by a business entity that includes the rehabilitation of a qualified property or transformative property. With that, the program identifies two different types of properties which determine the type of project and funding, and these are what is a qualified property and a transformative property. Qualified property must be an income-producing property, obviously within the state of New Jersey, and it needs to have been previously identified as having one of these four types of category groups or designation by one of the categories or groups. So it has to be either listed in the National Register of Historic Places, it has to be listed in the New Jersey Register of Historic Places, identified as historic by the Pinelands Commission, or has to have been identified or registered for protection by a municipality whose criteria for making such a determination has been approved by New Jersey's Historic Preservation Office. In all instances of these designations, the property may be either individually identified or be identified as part of a historic district. But if it's part of a historic district, it must have been identified as contributing to the historic significance of the district. Then for transformative property, has significant additional requirements that include location and some financial requirements. So for that, the applicant must show that the rehabilitation project will generate substantial increase in state revenues through the creation of increased business activity within the surrounding area. Then the property must also be individually listed in the New Jersey Register of Historic Places, and it must have a determination of eligibility from the keeper of the National Register of Historic Places. Additionally, the property must be located within a 1.5-mile radius of the center point of a transit village and within a city of the first class, or located within a government-restricted municipality. Finally, a transformative project cannot be a residential project. With regards to application and scoring, as I said, the program is a competitive program, so all applications will be reviewed and scored based on pre-established factors. Review of applications will be conducted by a selection committee that will include professionals with experience in historic preservation and the construction field. I would include staff from the DEP's Historic Preservation Office. The application will be evaluated according to five categories or factors, which are historic significance, imminent threat to the historic resource, project concept and team, site control, and whether or not the project will have a positive impact on the surrounding neighborhood. To receive a tax credit, an application must meet a minimum score of 50 points out of a possible maximum of 100 points. And should the program be oversubscribed in any year, then applications will be ranked based on scoring. The award site on the program are calculated based on percentage of the costs of rehabilitation, which are eligible costs, with actual percentages depending on the type of property, such as whether it's a qualified property or transformative property, or on location of the project. The most eligible projects can receive a tax credit up to 40% of eligible costs with a project cap of $4 million. Then eligible projects that are located within a qualified incentive tract or in a government-restricted municipality can receive credits up to 45% of eligible costs, up to a project maximum cap of $8 million. And then projects that have a transformative property, so they will be classified as transformative projects, can receive a tax credit up to a maximum of 40% of eligible costs, up to a project maximum cap of $50 million. Fees for the project have been calculated using a matrix similar to that used for the Aspire program, and take into consideration projected level of effort needed to conduct reviews, as well as expected submissions during the course of the program based on available information and projections. We have established a three-tier fee structure for the program, with the first two tiers based on project size. So we'll have a tier for small projects, which are projects under $10 million, $10 million or less, and then larger projects tier for projects that are over $10 million. This is our eligible cost. And then a third tier that will be exclusively for transformative projects. Detailed information on the specific fees for the programs have been included within the board memo. And finally, we are requesting for the members to approve three distinct actions. So we're asking for approval of the proposed new rules for the new historic property reinvestment program, and to authorize staff to submit the proposed program rules for promulgation in the New Jersey Register, and submit the proposed program rules as proposed final adopted rules for promulgation in New Jersey Register if no formal comments are received, subject to final review and approval by the Office of the Attorney General and the Office of Administrative Law. We're also requesting a delegation to authority staff to establish a date or dates for the availability of application and dates by which the applications might be submitted on an annual basis. And finally, we're also requesting for the creation of the Historic Property Reinvestment Program as initially authorized by the New Jersey Economic Recovery Act of 2020 to incentivize rehabilitation of identified historic properties in New Jersey by providing tax credits in an amount based on a percentage of the project's eligible costs, subject to final adopted rules. That's it, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for IDETA? If we have no questions for IDETA, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Giblin,
Jimmy Bauer.
Thank you, Noreen. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we'll move on to the film and digital media tax credit. This is the film and digital media tax credit program certification of unused or unredeemed credits in state fiscal year 2021 and an increase to state fiscal year 2022. Matt Sestrich, Senior Program Officer, Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Programs, presenting. Matt.
Thank you, Chairman. We're asking the members to approve the certification of the unused and unredeemed film and digital media tax credits for state fiscal year 2021 and use that amount to increase the tax credits available in state fiscal year 2022. PL 2021 Chapter 367 was enacted on January 12th of this year. It amended the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program. The statute increased the annual cap available for the Digital Media Tax Credit from $10 million up to $30 million beginning in state fiscal year 2019. Additionally, the statute directs the authority to certify any unused or unredeemed tax credits for legacy, studio partner, families partner, and digital media project categories in a given state fiscal year. Those amounts will then, at the authority's discretion, be used to increase the annual cap in the subsequent fiscal year for each of the categories listed above. Studio partner allocations, however, can only be used to increase studio partner cap in the next year. The authority can share allocation between the film lease partner category and the legacy bucket at its discretion. A little bit of background.
of previous approvals of this was at the October 2020 board meeting. The board approved the certification of over $64 million in unused and unredeemed tax credits for fiscal year 2020. That increased the allocation available for film projects in fiscal year 21 by $50 million for a total cap of $150 million. At that time, $50 million was the maximum increase allowed by statute. At the May 2021 board meeting, the board approved the certification of $10 million in unused digital media credits for fiscal year 2020, and that was used to increase the total cap in 21 to $20 million. PL 2021 Chapter 367 increased the digital media allocation to $30 million, as I mentioned. So the total amount available in 21 from the digital side was $40 million. Under the certification of the unused or unredeemed amounts for legacy film, in 2021, legacy film allocation started, as I mentioned, with $150 million in available credits. There are 16 approvals for $30.8 million. Two of those approvals withdrew before receiving any credits for a total of $4.3 million. The total unused or unredeemed credits for 2021 is just over $123.4 million, with a total legacy film cap for 22 of $223,405,825.57. For studio partner, a little bit easier math as we did not have any approvals. So the total unused or unredeemed amounts for 21 was $100 million. So the total cap for next year, fiscal year 2022, will be $200 million. Same story for the film lease partner. In 21, we had no approvals, so the unused or unredeemed amount for 21 was $100 million, which will increase next year's allocation to $200 million. On the digital media side, in 2021, digital media tax credit allocation started at $40 million. There was one approval in 21 for $7.5 million. Total unused and unredeemed tax credits for 21 was $32.4 million. So the increase to 2022 digital media tax credit cap is just over $62.4 million. Staff is recommending the board approve the certification and carry forward of the unused and unredeemed amounts for each of these categories, and each carry forward amount will increase the cap for fiscal year 2022. This request would only require one vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Do we have any questions for Matt? If we have no questions for Matt, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved. Phil?
Is that Phil?
Yeah.
Thank you. Can I get a second?
Jenny Thauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we'll go to the next item. We have, we're going to have six individual votes. We're going to continue with Matt, who will walk us through the six potential recipients of film and digital media tax credits. Matt, please.
Thank you. EDA staff has completed the review and recommends the approval of six applications under the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program. All six applications were under the film tax credit side of the program. We've received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review the production budgets to make sure each is reasonable for industry standards. All the film content has been reviewed and recommended for approval under the Act by the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission. Total credits utilized across the six recommended film approvals is over $4.8 million. The first film application under consideration is Lucky 8 TV, LLC. They will produce Foods That Built America. We are recommending an award of over $2.1 million, and this project includes a 2% diversity bonus. The second application is Universal Television, LLC, which will produce FBI Most Wanted Season 2. We are recommending an award of just over $2.1 million. The third application under consideration is The Furies Film, LLC.
They are responsible for the production of a wounded fawn, and we are recommending an award of $526,666. The fourth application under consideration is for AT Productions, Inc., who is the production company responsible for Armageddon Time. We are recommending an award of just over $4.6 million. The fifth application is for the Bros Movie LLC, who is responsible for the production of Bros. We are recommending an award of just over $8 million on this project, and this award does include a 2% diversity bonus. The sixth and final application under consideration is for Wonderlanded Production Services, LLC, who is responsible for the production of Wonderlanded. We are recommending an award of over $24.1 million on this project, and it includes a 2% diversity bonus as well as a 5% bonus on all expenses incurred through vendors in the targeted southern counties. Each of these projects will require its own separate vote. I'm happy to take any questions.
Do you have any questions for Matt on any of those six potential recipients? We have no questions, and we'll go through our first vote. Would be on Lucky 8 TV, LLC, tax credits in the amount of almost $2.2 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Elijah.
Thank you, Phil. Can I get a second?
Please, Angelo, second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, the next item, Universal Television, LLC. Tax credits of just over $2.1 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item is The Furies Film, LLC. Tax credits in the amount of just over $525,000. Can I get a motion to approve?
Giblin, so moved.
So moved. Angelo.
Thank you, Noreen. Thank you. Rob, can I make that a second there?
Yes.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstention? All right. Next item is AT Productions, Inc. Tax credits in the amount of just over $4.65 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Elijah.
Thank you, Phil. Can I get a second?
Jenny, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item is The Bros Movie, LLC. Tax credits in the amount of just under $8.1 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Jenny Bauer, I'll move.
Thank you, Rob. Can I get a second?
Second, Jenny Charles Harlow.
Thank you, Charles. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. The last one, folks. Wonderlanded Production Services, LLC. Tax credit in the amount of just over $24.1 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
I'll second it, Jenny.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Aye. Any recusals, abstentions? All right. We're now going to move on to the Director's Loan Review Committee. Marcia Marley is our chair there. Marcia, would you like to make a few comments?
I'll make some short comments. Thank you, Chairman. The DLRC met on January 27th. The committee reviewed several items that are now before the full board for approval. The first was the creation of the Main Street Lenders Grant, a pilot product under the Main Street Recovery Finance Program that will offer lending grants to be used by eligible microbusiness lenders to create new or supplement existing microbusiness loan products, as well as technical assistance grants equal to 50% of the lending grant request. The committee also reviewed two loan requests under the NJ Accelerate Loan Program. I thank the staff for their continued due diligence. And, Chairman, I now turn the meeting back over to you.
Thank you, Marcia. Our item here is the Main Street Lenders Grant product. Christina Fuentes, Managing Director, Small Business Services and Community Development, presenting. Christina.
Thank you. This item is requesting the board's approval of a pilot product utilizing $15 million from the Main Street Recovery Finance Program established through the Economic Recovery Act 2020 to create the Main Street Lenders Grant. The Main Street Recovery Finance Program provides a fund to allow NJEDA to create products. The $100 million appropriation shares a common purpose of supporting the growth and success of small and micro businesses in New Jersey. So far, the board has approved several products like the Small Business Lease Grant, the Small Business Improvement Grant, and the Main Street Microbusiness Loan, which all provide direct support to micro and small businesses through grants and loans. This product, however, will leverage partners and provide grant funding to eligible entities that typically work with small and micro businesses so they can provide resources to New Jersey microbusinesses directly. And the Main Street Lenders Grant will offer two grants. The first one is a lending grant, which can be used to support new microbusiness lending products or to supplement existing microbusiness lending products. The maximum lending grant that can be awarded to each entity is $1 million for this purpose, and this product would require that the awardee incorporates specific criteria to ensure that they are providing access to capital to New Jersey-based microbusinesses at attractive rates and terms. Recognizing that microbusinesses not only need access to capital, but also assistance with applying qualifying for such financing, the second type of grant that will be made available through this product to complement the lending grant is a technical assistance grant. This grant will support eligible entities with the cost associated with providing technical assistance to microbusinesses to prepare and access capital. The maximum technical assistance grant an eligible entity can receive is 50% of their lending grant, not to exceed up to $500,000. The product specifications highlight in greater detail the various requirements and uses for each grant, and eligible entities would be able to apply for both grants as well. Eligible entities that can apply for this product would need to have 10 years of lending experience and must be one of the following: a community development financial institution, or a CDFI, minority depository institution, or MDI, or an entity that meets the definition provided in the statute of any of an other eligible lender. And this definition also includes entities like zone development corporations and cities that have a population of 100,000 or more. And those cities would include Paterson, Newark, Jersey City, Elizabeth, and Lakewood Township. Nonprofit lenders like economic development corporations and community development corporations as well. Awardees that receive a lending grant would have 3 years to use their funds and would be required to use their lending grant to close at least 40% of their loans for businesses that are located in an opportunity zone eligible census tract. If they do not meet that requirement, NJEDA can recapture a lending grant, and we would ensure quarterly reporting is provided to make sure that goal is met. Staff is also requesting board's approval for the following items, that the CEO would have the delegated authority to increase the funding up to $22.5 million in case the demand exceeds the $15 million, for NJEDA to apply a 3% administrative cost fee on the total funding request to support administration of this product, and that approval and declines would be done through delegated approval based off of the product specification. That's it, and thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Great. Do we have any questions for Christina? There's no questions for Christina. Can I get a motion to approve?
Marcia, motion to approve.
Thank you, Marcia. Can I get a second?
Rosemary,
I'll second. Elizabeth, thank you. Thank you, Rosemary. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item is NJ Accelerate. ARC Aeronautics, Clark Smith, Director, Innovation Programs presenting. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So today we'll be presenting actually two of the first loan investment applications for NJ Accelerate. NJ Accelerate is currently a pilot program in which the EDA partners with best-in-class accelerators. Now, an accelerator is a formalized group that provides education, resources, and mentorship to early-stage technology companies so that these companies can achieve growth, which would typically take many years, in a considerably shorter timeline. For an accelerator to participate in NJ Accelerate, their program must submit an application and go through a due diligence review to verify that it meets the minimum approved eligibility requirements. These requirements include having a thorough selection process for companies, a cohort-based training structure, providing educational curriculum, having a formal graduation for program completion, and also making investments in graduate companies in some form. Currently, we have four approved accelerator programs. After approved for participation in NJ Accelerate, there are three financial benefits actually that can be leveraged. The first one is available just to the approved accelerator program, and it is a sponsorship that allows them to produce and host events here in New Jersey. The second is for graduate companies of an approved accelerator. This benefit provides a grant to cover a portion of rent with an approved co-working or incubation facility here in New Jersey. And the third, which these two are a part of, is an investment benefit for the graduate company. With this, the EDA can match the accelerator's investment into a graduate company on a one-to-one basis for a maximum amount of $250,000. I would add there is a 5% bonus to this amount for graduates that are certified as women or minority owned. The structure of the EDA's investment is separate from the accelerator's. The EDA financing comes in a form of a convertible note with a 10-year fixed term and a 3% interest rate. Payments begin at year 8, but there is no prepayment penalty on the loan. The EDA also receives a warrant, which is equal to 50% of our loan amount, which with the same 10-year term. A graduate company must submit an application to the EDA within 6 months of graduating from their approved accelerator program. So as I noted, there are two here today. They are both graduates of the Launch Lane Accelerator Program. This is one of multiple programs produced by the team at the University City Science Center, which is in Philadelphia. And the first here is for ARCS Aeronautics, LLC. The company is based in Mount Laurel, and all of their employees are located within New Jersey. The company has an advanced software platform for first responders. This platform delivers useful real-time data from multiple sources to a mobile device, which then increases the effectiveness in responding to an emergency situation. The product is currently piloted with multiple local emergency response departments. The company's founding team has experience in both software development and emergency response. The EDA's note would be for $49,970. Is there any questions? I guess we'll go one at a time for ARC Aeronautics.
Correct. Any questions for Clark on ARC? There's no questions for Clark. Can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Mark.
Thank you, Marcia. Can I get a second?
I'll second, Jenny Bauer.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's go to the second item that Clark mentioned, Envoy at Home Incorporated, a financing of $50,000. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you. Jenny, can I get a second?
Dragon, I'll second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstention? All right, we're moving on to the petroleum underground storage tank. This is the summary of the NJDEP petroleum underground storage tank remediation upgrade and closure fund program, projects approved by the Department of Environmental Protection. Michael Dealey, DEP manager, finance and development and underwriting. Michael.
Thank you. Under DEP's Petroleum Underground Storage Tank Fund program, we have one commercial and one residential application seeking approval. Both requests require board approval as each amount exceeds EDA staff's $100,000 delegation. Our one commercial grant request in the amount of $304,534 is from Ira Talman, owner of Garden State Golf, which is an auto repair facility in Essex County. This is a supplemental grant request to $250,000 of DEP grants previously approved to remove underground storage tanks and associated contamination. The requested funds will be used to complete additional remediation work at the site, including groundwater and reporting. The second application is the residential application request, which is from Mary Sargent in the amount of $102,172 to remove a leaking underground storage tank and complete the required remediation. Thank you.
Do we have any questions for Michael? If there's no questions for Michael, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you. Elizabeth, can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, folks, we're done with our 18 items to vote on. And now we're moving to board memoranda. Tim Sullivan, CEO presenting. Tim.
Yeah, I have no more than 2 or 3 hours of summary remarks to provide on the board memorandum. Okay, we've had a pretty long march of 18 voting items. Thank you to the members for all your support and great questions. You do have 6 delegated authority memos in your pack. Most of them are pretty short. The one exception, that's economic growth products. There's a pretty lengthy update there on things like the angel tax credit. Number 5, post-closing incentives modifications, a decent list of adjustments that have been made under the board, under the staff delegated authority. And happy to answer any questions on any of those.
Any questions for Tim? All right, we're going to move to the public comment portion of our meeting. First, I'd like to ask Hector Serrano to read the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this telephonic board meeting. Hector.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated by the operator at the beginning of the meeting, members of the public interested in providing the public comment can press 1, then 0 on their phone to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. We'd like to go over the NJADA public comment policy at this time, which is also available on the NJADA website. Each speaker will be prompted by the operator to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization, affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. The speaker may not register to speak more than once during the same public comments period to ensure enough time is available for all who wish to speak. Speakers may provide related documents, printed documents, or material attached to an email. We look forward to receiving public comments at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, and ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. Once again, if you have a comment, please press 1, then 0 at this time. And one moment for our first person. And again, please press 1, then 0 at this time. And at this time, there are no one. Oh, I'm sorry, we do have one person queuing up. One moment.
Okay.
And the question is from Niger Ali.
Yes.
Please go ahead.
Good day. My name is Niger Ali. I represent an organization in Camden, Concierge Transport Service. We're located in Camden County. I'm not really sure who I direct this question to. It's pertaining to the cannabis licenses. Just wanted to know... if there are, you know, whoever can answer it, you know, would there be any revisions to any of the current, I'm not even sure what to call it because there are so many municipalities that are not doing according to the prescribed method, so I'm not really sure to call it the prescribed method. So would there be any revisions to it? Because there were 56 licenses, and even though they were supposed to be specifically to help out the black and brown communities, in addition to all the rest of the communities, we have 56 licenses that were issued with no black and brown in leadership positions of any of those, ownership position of any of those companies, and just trying to figure out like what would we need to do in order to kind of get that number evened or you know start moving towards a evening of that number. So I'm just not really sure who to direct that to. I just wanted to speak to that, and just one other thing as far as the municipalities issuing their licenses versus the states. Recommendations and their licenses, it's becoming like a competition, and the municipalities are requiring, if not more, about comparable information to the state's requirements, which becomes a burden to the micro businesses, the small businesses, and we're just trying to figure out like what do we do in order to kind of. Even the playing field, or at least get a foothold in the playing field, get some real information, because you know we go to a lot of meetings and there's a lot of information being pushed around, and I'm not really sure what is the right information because I read some things from the CRC, I read some things from you know all different types of entities, and when in application, you know, they're not even following any of the prescribed methodologies in the municipality levels, and I just want to know, like, if there's something that we can do or somebody to revisit as a, you know, as this laws and everything just, you know, goes forward.
Hi, sir. It's Tim Sullivan from EDA here. Important question. Obviously, the topic that you're raising of kind of equity and inclusion in the new cannabis industry, deeply important to Governor Murphy and our entire team. Cannabis Regulatory Commission oversees the licensing process, so we don't, you know, have any involvement with the allocation of those licenses or the rules and procedures there. Happy to have our team follow up with you offline and get you information about, you know, who you can speak with at the CRC, who you mentioned. We don't have any direct involvement with the licensing process, either at the state level or the municipal level.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And at this time, there are no further questions in queue.
Great. Thank you, operator. If there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation in today's meeting. And I'll now make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second?
Karidi, second. Nick Brown, second.
Thank you, Marlene. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Thank you. This concludes our meeting. Appreciate everybody's time today.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, and ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.